Mine,
like a ghost town, visiting a ghost town.
It was a ghost town. See?
He was a con artist.
She did everything she could to hinder us.
Ask Louise someday about, we sat in their little bar down there waiting for a ride up to the village. This gal spent about a half an hour telling me all about Gilbert, my wife and I. And my wife is, you know, a tremendous gal, but she hadn't been exposed to that type of a person. And we walked out of there. Louise was in such tears. She said she liked Gil, but she wondered, how are you going to get rid of Gil? Because obviously Gil should be, he should have been imprisoned or electrocuted for all his sins, according to this woman. And it was unbelievable. Of course,
she
I sat
furnished
there.
All our cottages.
Huh?
She furnished all our cottages with plumbing and sheets and the whole thing out of the village.
Her thing.
It's too bad we couldn't prove that. We might have a little clout right now for getting them off our backs on the other. A lot of these former owners are making claims that they should be financially reimbursed for the stuff down there at Lucerne before turning it over to Holden.
They are? That's it. Like what?
Who knows? There really is nothing much worth that much down there except the hydro.
Is that in good shape?
We put some into it, about
it's really
4,000 or 2,000.
It's a good piece of equipment for to get an eye on, and it can be, you know, it needs a little patching here and there, and some of the rocks coming down, you have to prevent them from poking holes in the pipe, but it's very adequate. That thing could sit there for many, many years.
The machinery is okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The whole
thing. Who was the woman, Gil? I mean, what
was her name, though?
Which of the owners she was, because we're dealing with them now.
Yeah, well, first of all, but she was an operator.
Yes. Hmm?
She was not an owner of Lucerne?
Well, I think that she had interest in Lucerne, didn't she? And then she sold out.
But see, a lot of these people have sold out, but then they still maintain it because they weren't paid by whoever they sold out to, that they still have a claim against it. And it's more of a nuisance. Well, they, in a sense, they do, because the contracts were sold. It's just a really a big mess is what it is.
I wasn't aware of that.
The
Forest Service would have something to say about that, wouldn't it?
They claim not, because they don't want to get involved. Vern is working on it.
Well, we had an opportunity to take that over too, but we had our hands full of it up.
And you don't, even now, that's our worry, that we don't stretch ourselves too far into any direction.
I'm just wondering if it might tend to divide the program, wouldn't it?
If what?
To divide the program?
Not the way it's conceived now, Gil. It would be, we envision it more of an artist, of a community, self-contained, with different goals. There would be back and forth, like use of equipment, these sort of things, but it would not be draining people away from Holden. And I think if that were the case, I certainly wouldn't be for it. It is not a little hole down on the lake. Or
it shouldn't be.
Holden. No, because there's no point for it then.
It's a beautiful place. What about Oscar Getty's land there?
I think the boat club from Chelan has that now. That's a boat club from down lake.
Oh. Did they buy it? Or?
No. He still owns it. Yeah.
He still owns it. He's still living,
it.
Is he?
Yes, he is. There's something with his children that he has said they can't sell it for so many years.
He was a great help. Wonderful fellow. We would borrow his automobile to get up there. That neighbor of his, I took her for what she was. She was a...
But she did try every way to block Holden going ahead.
Sure, that meant the end of her big money maker. Yeah. She'd charge people. She'd take them up there and give them a tour of the village. She'd make good money that. This was the end of it, see, for her. That's why she didn't like me. She did everything she could to discourage us from taking it.
Just to show you how far it went, Wes Cream helped load a secretary into a vehicle that was taken out of the village, you know, for her college experience or something. And I'm sure that's a true story, that when Wes Cream was there to guard the place, he helped load a piece of furniture that went to the kids of Chelan County. So everybody was up there taking things out of the village at one. And of course, when we came in there, that was all over.
Didn't Wes realize what was happening?
I think he realized it, and he probably did the diplomatic thing, you know, for public relations. I give Wes a lot more credit than, you know, at times you wonder about Wes. And yet, under the circumstances, he's there by himself. And I think he knew who it was. And there was a matter
about that. But Wes, you know, is quite timid.
Yeah.
He wouldn't stand up to
He dropped signs. Remember the pictures or the signs that he had all over the village? In reference to what the Lord would punish those who stole, thou shalt not steal. He had those all over the place.
The indirect.
He's quite a character.
No, oh, boy.
Really is.
But he has had staying power. He's kept on there.
Well, he really had nothing else to do, you know. That's been a lifesaver for him.
His mother was there last summer.
Is that so?
And our daughter is on staff, and everyone was just delighted. They said she was Wes, except that he smoked cigars with a carbon copy of his mother.
Really?
They said if you just did.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
You've met her, have you?
No, but I know Wes, and I think that was, I could see that from a psychological point of view. That, but he's made a tremendous contribution to the village, and yet he's the type of person that, like Gil would say, who else would have called him or challenged him? I mean, who would have done it? Where? And yet at the village, he fulfilled a role and became a functional person with a little more discipline, I think. That would have been better than, you know, one building that went down out of lack of discipline.
Oh, he has it now.
Yeah, you bet. So, those are the things. Can you kind of scratch your brain, though, sometime, Gil, about, like, Bergstrand, we're going to lose. I'm not aware of what. Now, I appreciate your comment, but I wasn't aware of Bergstrand's contributions. So there's probably things there that even some of us, like Ricky and myself, that were pretty close to it, probably we're not giving him the credit that we ought to do, and, you know, in terms of history, because...
Well, I look upon that fellow as a major contributor. I think it would have been hard to put the thing over without people like him.
Well, he was able, I know, to see when Augustana approved the project, that automatically meant that the new Lutheran Church in America, which was 4/5 German of the old ULC, 1/5 was Augustana. They had the power in numbers, but they were obligated to support the village for 2 years on the basis of the merger.
Yeah, they had made a commitment.
Yeah, for a 2-year commitment. And it was that 2 years where we were able to get breathing spell. And then when Dr. Bergendorf came into the picture and just fell in love with it, who was the number one Lutheran or Swedish Lutheran scholar, he was able to really, you know, get the heads against the wall back there, and then we had it made under Dr. Fry. But Fry could have just washed this place out real easy. But he was committed because of Bergstrand's work. I suppose Bergstrand would have been the leader there with Augustana to get that as a commitment. So I can appreciate what Bergstrand would have done at that level.
See, Augustana had their annual meeting in Seattle that year. in 1960.
Right.
Dr. Seeger, he was instrumental in getting a lot of their pastors up to the village.
That's a whole busload of them. Yep. That's right. Dr. Seegerhammer, I took him up there.
Seegerhammer became, he
would be second in command in the LCA. Yeah. He was secretary of LCA under Dr. Fry. Came as a bishop out of California. He was the president of this Swedish area in California. Became secretary of the LCA. And I remember he and his son-in-law, I took him up and we had that whole boatload. Yeah, that was...
That was one of the very fine weekends we had. We put up a real good dinner for them.
And Bertha's,
I remember all the details, how we got the food in there and all that.
Bertha's cooking?
Well, was Bertha there then at that time?
Who is Bertha?
Oh, you got to know about Bertha. She was the cook up there the first 3 years. And a more dedicated person you'd never find. And she put up with the hardships like nobody could imagine. We did the cooking for all those people, mind you, on a little three-legged stove about this wide. On the camp stoves outside the fireplace top. That's all we had.
That was in the kitchen?
The kitchen had a lot of oil burners, but we couldn't use them. We had no electricity. So Bertha did the cooking, and what a cook. I can tell you, it had good food up there to keep all these young people happy. And she could cook like nobody I've ever seen. Fine meals, and of course we had no refrigeration. We made a refrigerator out of cold water. Made it out of one of the pools in the backyard of one of the homes up there. And of course, the chipmunks and everything else was after the food in this pool. And we did some ingenious things. And all the hot water we had was heated on in boilers over a...
Everything we have is good. We have a chocolate marble cheesecake and plain cheesecake with fresh strawberries, and we've got chocolate mousse, French fried ice cream, caramel cream amaretto, which is a custard with amaretto on top, grasshopper pie, and ice cream crepes, all over.
How about you, Gil? What would you like?
Nothing for me.
I've had a pass for dessert. The food was so good.
Okay. We're all going to pass. See, you're talking about Bertha, was her name?
Yeah, Bertha Pearson.
Pearson.
Oh, people just loved her.
Yeah.
Hardship, though, to cook under those situations.
Oh, it was terribly hard, but of course we all pitched in and helped. I made meatballs that first year for all the pastors that came up there on that trip. There were 145 of them in 1961. And I had to roll up all those meatballs, and they ate every one of them.
Where did she come from? She
was the cook at LDI.
Her daughter married Reverend Stein's son.
Right.
That's right. So she kind of came out of LBI, but her daughter actually married Reverend Stein's son, who was a medical doctor. Wasn't he a medical doctor?
Yeah.
And I believe he went to the mission field. Now, whether he's on the Foreign Service now.
Well, Bertha made a tremendous contribution. I think we paid her $100 a month. And she worked from 5 o'clock in the morning until everything was done at evening. Great contribution. And we've never had better food in the village than when she was there.
I think her stove is in the museum. We have Bertha's stove, the original first wood stove that she got.
That was in house one.
Yeah, the first bath I took up there, I heated my water out on that behind house one and at the fireplace. That's where I took my sponge bath.
We burned an awful lot of wood up there that year, heating water.
Why was there no electricity, Gil?
Well, you see, the mining company had brought electricity up from Chelan. There was a high line all the way from Chelan to Golden Village. And when the mine people withdrew while they took the transformers. So all we had was a lines and no transformers. And it would have cost $60,000 to replace the transformers. And it would have cost about $12,000 to restore the lines because they had, in many places, had been broken by snowfall and ice and all of that. So we had a big study on electric. And we determined that we just didn't have the money to restore it like that. So we determined to put in these electrical units.
The generators that came out of Alaska.
That out was of Alaska.
Out of a Coast Guard bay.
I got those two 50 kW units for $5,000. And we built the powerhouse that first year. And we had the crane to lift these heavy units onto the truck, but no way to get them off. See, we only had a truck up there at that time.
Yeah.
So we had to skid that thing off, and I tell you, that was a job. We had to, we put in the foundation for the building and the foundation for these units. But we didn't dare to build around it because they were so big that they wouldn't go through a door of any kind. So we built the platform and the foundation and then skidded this thing out of there and installed them before we built the unit around it.
And with your technical expertise, do you realize that you built that building about 20 feet from the 100-year avalanche zone? That building
right.
was spared when the avalanche went through there and up onto the tailing pile.
Yeah.
If that thing would have been 20, 30 feet towards the village, you'd have lost her.
Did you know that when you built it?
No, we didn't.
You've got a little extra power helping you out there.
Well, I think we realized that there were quite a forest right above there that protected it.
Yeah, the trees, and it was far enough back. And then they wanted it for sound, too. You wanted it back from the village for noise, so when the diesel ran.
And later, the ambulance came through there and swept out one of our firehouses.
Yeah. And we lost trucks and jeeps.
You haven't heard a noise until you've heard an avalanche.
You know, there was the biggest one in memory came, wiped out part of the road this winter, came down.
This winter?
This winter.
Is that so?
I think, had you heard that?
No, I haven't.
Where is that?
Well, it was below 10 mile.
Below 10 mile?
Yeah, I think it was 9 miles, somewhere in there. And they had, when they started to shovel it out, they had lookouts posted, and another one came down, and everyone got out of the way, though.
That's all.
But they said the miners said that in all the years they were there, there was never that big a one.
In that area?
In that area. Yeah, this one sounds like a gigantic thing.
Yeah, the one north of the village, yeah, that was huge. It went up on top of the tailing pipe, across the river, up on top of the tailing pipe, put left branches up there.
Where did it come from?
Well, right up the draw, Martin Peak.
It
just started from Martin and dropped. If you have,
I hadn't heard about
if you've that. Been up on Martin Ridge, it's there many, that's a huge area in there. And
so
of course,
we're talking now about the one that wiped out.
Yeah.
That took out the garage, pickup truck.
The other was just for that locality in the road. Mm-hmm. I'm sure yours was a bigger one.
I saw an avalanche off Buckskin. I heard it first.
Yeah.
And I rushed out and saw the whole thing.
Yeah, I was there at that time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah. It came down from the top of Buckskin into the river and almost to the creek. And we were there. In fact, I was washing outside, taking my sponge bath when that broke loose.
It would be a helpless feeling, wouldn't it?
Oh, that's awesome.
It sounded like 40 freight trains coming down the mountain. It was really awful.
And then you get the mushroom cloud like an atom bomb with all the snow, just the plume that goes up.
And the time we had the cloudburst in Copper Creek.
What was it?
That little creek, you know, became like it was a horrendous stream of water. It was about 50 times as big as
a new channel.
Practically wiped.
From a cloudburst, don't they?
From a cloudburst.
That was during the Seafarer Parade in Seattle. They have, that was the day of the Seafarer Parade, and they had this storm that came over Seattle. It really dumped up there. They had they had kids staying around trees overnight at Hard Lake. Now they couldn't let the kids go. They were trapped with water on both sides, and no one died up there. With a friend of ours, remember John? John, they were up on Cloudy Pass, and they just made it into the trees before the hailstone, like golf balls, start hitting. And they came down, you know, they were walking through 2 feet of hailstone prior to the water coming down.
So they were able to stay overnight at Image Lake in a cabin. But there were people that were trapped down at Heart Lake in the river. When the water came so fast, the river just came right up. They couldn't even get out of it, which was quite a... But no one lost their lives.
It changed the course of the Copper Creek Stream, you know, from the waterfall down.
Yeah, cut a new channel right through.
Yes, and it almost wiped out our intake there.
Yeah.
And it filled our tank up there with about 4 feet of silt. It was an awful thing. We just couldn't believe what we saw when we ran up there. Boulders and as big as a house almost coming down that mountainside. You know. That's a tremendous force. Well, great times.
Well, I'm glad I got invited to lunch. It's fun to be
you
here.
You get invited to lunch and then you're the host. That's
not fair. No, I like joy to come down. That's
I know
a treat
you're,
for
you're
me.
Hearing me all chauvinist, so I can't argue with you.
Well, I've been reading these articles in the paper about self-assertion. So I get a kick out of that. But I know about women being...
Oh, I have no problem.
No, I love the article. I think they're tremendous. We got gals up at our area driving dump trucks and stuff around, all push button. And it's terrific. It's very great. I'm all for it. I think there's an interim there that...
You know,
oh, they've asked for it, haven't they?
Huh?
Yeah.
They've asked for it.
Boy, these gals driving
they're delivering
dump trucks,
the concrete now and these huge concrete... trucks, you know, and lumber trucks.
See, we've just found out what fun it is, and men have been doing it for years and complaining about what work it is.
And they get paid about $10-$12 an hour. They like it.
Well, they're making $20,000, $25,000 a year, those gals driving those trucks
right
there. There was an article in the Seattle paper the other day about this gal. She's not going to spend 20 years to get $45,000 to $50,000 executive position. She went with her father in the trucking business up there around North Bend, and she's making that $40,000 right now. That was really amazing. That was last week's paper. Well, anyway, that we get back to self-assertion. I suppose that's one great thing about the village, is that the village helped lay people to be, you know, think well of themselves, and that's where I've always felt the place really, you know, really caught on, and like Gil touches on that thing.
Well, I had many a man and a woman, too, say that they'd never had as good an experience as they had up there, just working for free. And you know, those people not only worked for free, but they paid their board and room while they were there.
There
was $3 a day for...
to work there.
To work there.
Well, that's and something that has changed.
That's right. Well,
and they complain about having to...
That wasn't the young people now. These were other people.
Who came in.
More mature people that had jobs.
Well, to me, it was ever since we have been going there, and I must look up the year we started. It was when the power would die down every night at 10, and there were very few people in the... in the lodges. We were up in the chalets, there were so few people there, so it had to be those first years.
Yeah, well, you were running on the hydro, or the oil-fired hydro, because the lights came on all night when we were on the water hydro plant. But when you ran with a diesel electric, that's when
that
they turned it off.
At 10 o'clock.
Well, you were up there many years ago then.
I turned off the
candles. We'd always
the plant when the pastors were there at 10 o'clock, and they were all up, you know, they hadn't gone to bed, and they were mad about that.
I thought it was neat. If you wanted to talk, you could light a candle. Yeah.
But the village was never as beautiful as when the lights were off. Then you could really see the stars.
And now the satellites.
Yes.
Every year
we watched the Sputnik come over Holden Village. We saw that.
Fabulous.
Oh.
It's in the right latitude or something for a long time.
And the people who were there at that time, we had no lights. They complained about it when they got lights. Mm-hmm. They wanted to go back to no lights.
But to me, even the people working there or the lectures, all of that has been an experience in community. And just now are the sociologists and all the rest of them coming to the importance of that in people's lives. And to me, if the church can provide a place where you can experience the leveling that you have, everyone being equal in the sense that your opinion is worth a PhD from some seminary, your opinion is equal to his, that's where it's at, and that's what it's all about.
You've got to give Hinderly credit for having people up there that could make that place interesting. I tell you,
you yeah. didn't feel like going to bed because you got into so many arguments with people.
He is a superb communicator, and he can bring
that
out
right.
in other people, and I have never met anyone in my life that could do that as well.
Right.
Yeah, the wrong
other deficiencies with that.
The wrong person would have sterilized the program, and I think that's where God called Carol, you know, that was his great gift, that he surrounded himself with people that were dynamic and would let it go on a give and take. And Carol a lot of times said, well, if they can't take it, they don't belong here. People that came up there and demanded that I had the truth and mine is the only way, they were the ones that had to walk out. Even like Dr., not Wilt Burkham, but the elderly Augustana. That's the elderly statesman in the Augustana became a human being up there.
Not Burgundy.
Right, Burgundy.
Oh,
yeah. Became a human being in the village. And they loved his wife up there. You know, everybody loved
it. It's surprising how some of the top people in these synods have come up there and just loved it.
Now, Bugie, who was Bill Bugie out of Missouri, who was a vice president in Missouri, came up there, and he was the first. We were there the same period of time, and he came in, and he was under the law and very uptight about everything. He stayed for 2 weeks, and at the end of that time, he was just blown free. It was beautiful.
Well, you had a fountain pen.
Well, the big question at the beginning was whether or not that place was too isolated. And I always fired this back. This is the thing that's going to make this place is the fact that it's isolated. We've got to set people apart. You know? It's hard to get used to that idea, but that's proven to be right.
Where you have all things infringing on you, you cannot have the concentration and
right.
the serenity. I hope with this oil crunch now we won't. Our registration was up so high, and as it hit, I thought, what is this going to do to the people coming
you
from
think
the
there'll be
Midwest?
Some cancellations? Maybe?
Well, there'll probably be cancellations. I think in the long run, it's going to... The people that want to be there will be there, so it's a matter of what type of priority they have for being in the village.
Yeah, I don't think you can keep them away. They'll find a way to get there.
Oh, yeah. If you want to be there, you'll be there. We talked many years ago about the bloody noses on the dock, you know, people fighting to get in the village, and that day has come. Now, that was a number of years ago. We talked about people would have bloody noses on the dock fighting over the seat on the bus just to be in the village. That was kind of our dream, but that was a reality. There was also the banker that we sat with at one of your meetings. You called me to make sure I was at that meeting when we were drumming up. And I talked about a $100,000 a year subsidy to get the place going, and this guy just about went through the roof. But he was not a Holden person, and he dropped out of the program and took another bank position in Minneapolis.
I think, Gil, it'll help you to understand. At our last board meeting last June, we had a gentleman come in from Pullman, from University of
Washington State.
Washington State.
We call that the Cowville.
I just had two kids that went there. I can't block out. Anyway, he had a proposal, and he wanted to interview people who had things to do with the forming of Holden and then write a book on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it just wasn't Holden style to do this kind of thing. And yet we ended up by saying to him, thank you, but no thank you. He wanted us to underwrite the cost of publishing it and then to sell it. And he showed us some of the things he had done, which were fine, but they were slick, promotional kind of things. It just hasn't been our style. So the board decided not to go that route. But it started them thinking that there were many people who knew things about Holden and about the blessings that God had showered on Holden and the directions that it had taken that we were completely unaware of, and that we should, as good stewards, make an effort to get some of this. And their suggestion was really no direction, not like a book or an article or anything. It was just we should have this. And tapes seemed the easiest way to do it. And then you lose it so quickly. Even Bill, who was in on so much at the beginning, many of these things were new to you.
Well, I think it's wonderful that he's been able to stay on the board all these years. You needed some continuity there.
That's right. And now
you're about the only one that has been...
There's a few of us. Vern and myself are...
Vern,
of course. We've had, you know, I never discount Erman Lunder. We've had him as kind of maybe not a voting member, but a contact person with LBI.
Was he on at the beginning also?
Yeah, well, Erman wasn't really a board person. He came kind of LBI's representative on the board, and it was kind of an honorary position, but since he's such a loving person, you know, the guy just, he's been terrific. I really appreciated Herman.
Is he still on?
I think he would be LBI's representative. The corporation is given a kind of a representative position. It's a non-voting position to LBI. So they've always had a person sitting in. And
right.
I think the reason for that would be, Gil, that they still have one-half mineral rights in the area. And they are a Lutheran corporation. So between that, plus the gift that at least the corporation found fit to have one advisory member from LBI, and that's been Lunder. And so there's been a kind of a continuity for it, though he wasn't, quote, a business legal person in it from the beginning. But there had been continuity, and of course that's really why I stayed in it now.
I tell you, LBI played an important role in this thing. They were most willing to give up their title to the place in favor of a new corporation. And there weren't too many corporations that would have been willing to do what they did. It was quite remarkable. They showed a very fine spirit. They couldn't have handled it financially, and I think it would have been a vastly different place if they had controlled it.
Or Gil, now you were on the board at LBI when all this was going on, right?
Well, I recommended that they give it up.
Right. Yeah.
In favor of the new corporation, because it needed to be on a good,
Pan-Lutheran,
sound national level.
Pan-Lutheran, yeah.
But they did make a real contribution.
Well, I see, Gil, for what it's worth, I see that the good thing about a board is that it has new blood, and I think the way the corporation is set up now, new blood comes in. There's length terms of office, so you are going to go into a new stage, and pretty soon, you know, it won't be too long before all the people on the board will be, quote, new people. And so whatever you can do to keep this historical perspective would be good. I would be concerned, for instance, God forbid that a house would burn down, but all the stuff that you must have, I hope it's kind of in one box or one area where at some time it could be access for archives or...
Now, Gil already, you came in later, but he has thought of this already. And
Now, I wondered what records they have at the village. I'm wondering if I'm the only one that has some.
Yeah, well, I suppose all of us are wondering that. I
don't know what they have.
Let me write to Edie. She is so efficient, and she's going to be leaving in July because her 2 years are up, and she wants to go back into teaching. And a new person would not know the way Edie does. So I'm going to write to her today and ask her to outline what she has, like dates of minutes.
Ask them if they have copies of the minutes of the feasibility committee and the interim committee and of the council, the development council.
Committee, interim committee, and council.
Yes, the development council.
See, I may have some of those too, and I think Ricky may have some, and if you had some and they have, we ought to be able to pool together everything. Because I don't think I've thrown away any letters of Poland, but someday, after 1980, I'm going to discard my material. Say.
Vern had several file cabinets full, but he has not had the time yet to look through them. And Bob Quello, I was explaining to Gil, he promised me that he would coordinate all of this. But I'm going to then suggest to him that if there are gaps, to contact either of you. But I'll ask Edie what's in the village, because that's the place to start. There was very little, in the period that I've been on the board, very, very few minutes. And of trustees, I think she only had one trustees meeting.
Up
and
there.
This may have been intentional, or, you know, sometimes those things, she said, they just didn't want around where anyone could see them.
Yeah. Well, the last two or three years, we haven't wanted. Of course, I've been the secretary and the lousy one, but we have purposefully, though, not wanted to. The last few years, I didn't think it was advisable. In fact, well, Ricky's in on this, too. he recommended that this keep within the trustees, not even to the corporation, which is 24.
Now, our minutes don't go out too.
Yeah, anything. So there's been quite a limited, but maybe. However, I don't think the things right in the last 2 years are all that important. I think what's important is when we get to the beginning, and we keep that. There's also, are you ever interested in writing a book? Is that your cup of tea?
Oh, I have thought about it. But, you know, that takes time, and I keep so busy with so many things.
Well, to me now, something like your writing a book would make much better sense than someone from Washington State who has came to Holden the first time last year doing it. And it was just the whole concept of it was counter to what...
Well, he wouldn't have a feel of it, I don't think.
No, no way he
could. I talked to him. I was rather surprised that someone that had been such a recent visitor there would want to attempt it.
Did he contact you?
Yes, I met
him
up there.
Because he had, we had instructed him quite specifically not to pursue this.
Mm-hmm.
And he really got quite angry, which to me was ridiculous, because it was... We never encouraged him. We did not ask him to do it. He came to us with it. And from that alone, Gil, I just sort of felt he wasn't the one to do it. Because if his feelings were that tender, it was, you need more of a breadth than a depth. He's finished, I think.
I know the thing was going on, I made noise.
We'll forgive you. It was just me talking. It's not important.
Those 4 years of mine up there were... really bright spots in my life, really. I was in a position to do what I did without any pay, and I put a lot into it, but it was all, as far as I'm concerned, was a real blessing. I think that, and what I dreamed about for Holden Village is coming true. That's the dividends.
You know, Gil, what...
I didn't see eye to eye with Pastor Kinderly at all times, but in spite of that, I feel that it has a great future. I really do.
The blessings are still showering on it. I had a call last week from a Chinese gentleman who went up there in, I believe it was January or February, you know, when the first time up there, he went up with another couple, he and his wife. And he has practical experience all over the world in sewage and hydroelectric. And he called me and he said, if there's ever anything I can do, you know, I'd be willing to take a month. And when God keeps providing people like that, through no efforts of ours, you know, with someone who just went up there and loved the place.
It's just a repetition of what was going on when we were stuck.
And, you know, I felt with some of the hard times that we've gone through and some of the really wrenching things, because I love Carol and Mary Hinderby very dearly, and what we went through was a terrible, it was like transplanting a tree, you know, a terrible shock both to the community and to them. And yet, when I see the other, I feel that, you know, God's purposes are still in the place, and he's still, because institutions do come and go, and I don't think you should cling to them if their usefulness is over.
Well, I felt sorry for Carol in many ways. I had a lot of sympathy for him, because he was a very controversial person. And in spite of that, how he could carry that thing along for all those years is kind of...
Thank you.
Surprising. I tell you, that year I was up there with him, it wasn't an easy year.
To say the least, yeah. Well, some of the vibes came in there sometimes. I think sometimes, you know, you get talking about personalities, where I'm interested in talking in terms of learning to deal with human beings, because, let's say, feelings played an important part in the village. It's just like, you think, take Werner's position. Now, Werner was related to you, and yet to Carol, and somehow Werner has survived the situation over the years.
I wondered how in the world he did it.
Well, God gave him some unique gifts. I think if you go back to Carol Hinderly's original secretary, Johnson, a person very much a good mind, but a touch of grace where you could throw dung in his face all day and he'd smile. And I had some interesting conversations back with him many years ago, and he could see in Carol some great gifts. And he also was aware of some of his faults and problems, see, and that, but Carol always had to have a Werner Jensen or Johnson person behind him or with him. He wouldn't have survived without it.
Oh, that's true.
And essentially, you know, so I really see, I probably see Werner in a lot different light than a lot of people do. And I think, I really feel that Werner's been forced to bear some burdens that no human should have borne. So there's that perspective, but yet somehow I would be appreciative of your feelings about Werner and kind of how that comes in and put that into perspective, because there's...
Well, I give Werner a lot of credit for being able to carry on.
But see, he worked with you for 1 year, didn't he? Remember, he volunteered a summer from Boeing?
He was just a volunteer.
A volunteer,
yeah.
But he came into the village and started to get a feel for it, so that in essence he became the business manager after you left.
Right.
Yeah. And there's...
He took over.
Yeah. And there's...
I've never talked to Werner much about it.
I think somehow your feeling even about that situation would be interesting. And then somehow your feeling too about the little political entities that existed of how we got received by the church at large. Those are important things. If somehow you could come to grips with. Now, some of these are going to be your opinions, but I think it'd be nice to have those, even if they just get on tapes. But
I don't think I understand what you mean by the last.
The political reality,
yes,
that you dealt. Well, the whole concept of how, for instance, the Augustana Church said we're going to buy this project. How the ALC, or excuse me, the old Norwegian Lutheran Church, how did they say we're going to buy this project? And then the Lutheran Free Church under Strumman, I mean, at the level in Minneapolis, somehow those boards said we're going along with it. So naturally our representatives were Strumman and Bash. But I think your comments and feelings there would be appreciated. You know, that'd be interesting to have. And if you kind of work with it, I can envision you coming up in the village and even lecturing on the history. And then those could get into tapes where they would go in the tape library. And I don't see you being a threat to anybody anymore. Those days are gone.
No, I don't feel that anymore, but I did feel that I should be completely out of the picture. I think for Carol's good, for Werner's good, and all that, I should be very quiet. I went up there every year and had a good time, enjoyed it, see how everything was moving along, and I appreciated all the things they've done. I don't have any negative feelings about Holden Village.
No, no.
I feel good about John being there.
Yeah.
My reaction to that man was very good right off the bat.
No, he's a gifted person, man.
But I felt most badly about the fact that so many of these wonderful people that were so instrumental in putting it over were completely out of the picture.
But you see, so few people know who they are even, that it's hard to... Someone like you knows, so you can help us in being a bridge to them.
Now, what about Vic now? He's deceased, Vic Nelson.
Victor died.
Yeah, and his wife still living?
A year ago, Christmas time.
Yeah.
Who is Vic Nelson?
Well, Vic was a tremendous man, behind the scenes, working for Gil, but the quiet man that got the job done. The banquets were really, that was Vic's big deal, wasn't it? I mean, behind the scenes, the quiet guy that did all the work. Or, you know, really, I'm sure that, well, you know.
That's
more
how
about.
I got to know Vic, was through this thing.
Yeah.
See, I got a telephone call one evening from Randy Stein. He and his father and a couple of other fellows had been up to Holden after they got the news that it could be available to them. And they didn't know what to do with it. They were flabbergasted. They had no idea that they could ever handle it in any way, because it was a big project, took a lot of money and all that. So they wanted some opinions from people that knew something like. So he called me and he says, how would you like to go up there and study the feasibility of this thing? And Vic was another one he called. My neighbor. And there was an electrician And that fellow's name, I can't
remember. We got to put it. He was
Kent.
Yeah.
I have never been able to think of his name, and I don't know where I've got a record of it.
Oh, we can get that name. Okay, now that and the plumber, we got to come up with a good name. They were, these guys were, like you say, $100 an hour. They're $1,000 a day men.
Well, we went up there this weekend, and we left about 4:30 in the morning so we could catch that boat. And, of course, I had been up to Luzerne before and to Stehekin, but I'd never been to the village. But I'd known a lot about it because I had friends that were engineers up there. And they told me all about it, what a wonderful place it was and how beautiful it was. So I was really excited about getting up there. And we borrowed Oscar Getty's car and went up there. And we spent 2 days up there. We searched that village from top to bottom. We went through every room in the village and appraised the whole thing. And then that night we had a long discussion. We met on the floor. There was nothing to sit on there in house one. And we slept there on the floor too that night. And we discussed the pros and cons of this thing. And you know that the majority of those five fellas didn't see how we'd ever could do it. But I said, boy, I know if we can get the right people to say this is something the church needs, but we can put it over. We can get somebody to take it over. And, of course, we made the report to the LVI board. And we said that provided certain things took place, why it was feasible. Because basically the village is very sound. It's beautiful, it's set apart, and it's beautiful. It has everything that it needs to become a tremendous place for the church. But we have to involve people on a national level. If we can do that, it's a go. See? But that first night up there was something.
Now, Vic was there at that deal, huh?
Vic was one of them. That's the first time I'd met Vic.
That was Vic.
And that was worth an awful lot to me to get to know a man like Vic.
He
became one of my very best friends. We built a condominium together later on. We live in it now.
Just a half a cup.
He was my neighbor there. I just loved the guy.
Great.
And Ed Autumn was with us. Well, that was quite a night. And we discussed Holden Village from top to bottom until 2 in the morning. And when I finally went to sleep, I heard a noise, and here was a huge rat. I put my flashlight on. There was a huge rat from my mattress over to the fireplace. Never forget that. That place was so loaded with rats, you wouldn't believe it. And mice by the millions.
Oh, yeah.
You see, the hotel was full of cereal. Box cereal and barreled cereal. They'd left that all there, and the rats and the mice had a heyday there for 3 years.
Was
had absolutely multiplied until they were everywhere. And of course we saw all the broken windows and all the vandalism. All the people camped out in the gym floor. They built fires out there in cans right on the middle of the gym floor. See? They had vandalized the schoolhouse. But underneath it all, it was a marvelous place, structurally sound. We crawled under the buildings and saw the foundations, how solid they were. That was a tremendous trip. We often kidded Vic about his car. He had an old car, I can't remember the name of it. It was an oddball car, and we just barely got home in it. Another time we went up there, the thing went to pieces right on the street in Wenatchee. We had to take the train back.
Yeah.
Well, they were great fellows.
How is your time now? Are you you're not on punching the clock today, are you?
No, I'm not. We're shorthanded today because Monday is our manager's day off.
Oh.
And we have one gal that's in Norway today. So we're two people short. But it'll live without me.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of fun at that store.
Oh boy, I bet.
Yeah. I teach there, you know. I teach stitchery. And we've had an awful lot of nice people come. People that do that kind of work, they're good people.
Well, you have such a beautiful talent for it. Is it something you learned?
Oh, I picked it up after I sold the fuel business.
So it isn't something you learned in childhood, either?
No. I was always interested in art, and this is a form of art. You paint with yarn instead of oil.
You could see yourself doing that in the village. That's just another art form for the village, too, isn't it?
Well, I had classes up there, so.
That you have.
I had 50 people in one class.
That's great. Yeah.
Oh, it'd be fun to be up there a whole summer.
I could think of it. Do
a lot of things. I could raise some money, too.
How long would it take you to get a... Say that you say you'd go up for an interval of time. When are you free to go up? How are you going to around the world this summer or next summer or what?
Oh, I don't have any definite plans. I'd like to go to Norway again this summer sometime or maybe fall.
How about your wife now? Is she in the village for a period of time? Does she...
She isn't much for going places now. She's got some arthritis. Her knees. I have too, but I live with it.
Yeah, now you sold your home though, didn't you? Right, you're living in a condominium, aren't you?
Yeah.
And we have. The house, is your son-in-law, did he buy your house? Or is it,
No, I practically gave that to LBI.
Oh, the home?
Yeah, the big home.
What are they using that for then? Is that
they sold it.
Oh, really?
Unfortunately, they sold it for $75,000, and it was today it's worth a quarter of a million.
Yep. Beautiful place in Edmonton. Oh, man. A lot of Holden kids went there and stayed at that place, you know.
Yeah. We entertained a lot of them there.
Yeah. That place should be photographed. You know, your original home. Should have photographs of that for even now if we could get pictures of the area.
Well, that wouldn't relate to Holden.
Well, no, but your home and your residence, I think, is... Well, a lot of kids were at that place, you know, in terms of, you know, somebody reading the history, especially those
kids.
Well,
it'd be interesting to the people that were there, but not to too many people.
But just an idea that, you know, if we get into history, you know, you have some photographs of that. Do you have any pictures of when those forerunners, any kids were at your house? You've got a few of those around.
Yes,
it would show both together.
Yeah. I've got thousands of pictures.
Yeah.
We've given you a whole year's job trying to get all this together, haven't we? But I think it would be neat to have you up
I
the
have sets of slides that we used in our promotion.
Yeah.
We had those all over the U.S. You know, stacks of them, about 140 pictures. We'd send them out to people.
Now I know where to get them when I need them.
I've got scads of those.
Yeah. Well, we want to keep hold on to that stuff, right?
Well, I think your idea of spending a summer up at Holden and teaching stitchery would be tremendous.
Yeah, that would really be neat.
Well,
they're even talking about the possibility of rebuilding Chalet too and having it as a craft kind of center.
Oh, is that
so? Wouldn't that be a natural kind of thing?
You know, that was the best
that
little house up there, number two, that had that little apartment in it.
Yeah. If we'd had fire detection system in there, but I shouldn't speak about that. I could have put that fire out with it when it started. But anyhow, we learned something from that.